Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Well, welcome back, Dad.
Well, thanks for welcoming me back. I'm glad to be back. It's better than not being back.
That would have been really weird if you just stopped showing up.
I just didn't show up. I don't answer the door. I'm not home.
Things awkward, you know? I don't know what I'd do about that. I'd tell Mom on you, I guess.
Yeah, get my bar back on me.
I know. I have to wrangle you.
That's right.
Well, you have a good week? Get up to anything good?
Oh, it was just a very busy weekend. Had lots to do. Had to get the pool functioning and clean and working. And we had theater stuff to take care of. And we had grandchildren to watch. It was just a nonstop weekend.
Sounds like a party.
Glad I can go back to work and rest.
Oh. I can't say I did anything like to that level. I'm fully vaccinated now. I didn't get vaccinated. I got vaccinated 2 weeks ago, but I became fully vaccinated.
All right.
Magic of science.
Congratulations. Welcome over to the bright side.
I know. It's great. Everyone was talking about like, oh, what restaurant they're going to go to first. And like bars allow bar seating now in New York. So everybody's like excited to go out. And like, I've gone to the gym. That was it. That was the thing I was excited about.
Just well, that's me too.
Like, I even have some weights at my home, but like I get to lift slightly different weights. That was the thing I was most excited about.
Right there with you, getting to go to the gym. And then now they've dropped the mask mandate too. If you're in the gym in West Virginia, you don't have to wear a mask if you're working out.
It is still very much a thing at my gym. It's still, and it's also on a, like they have a certain amount of people they allow in at a time. So it becomes like an exclusive club in like normal, like popular gym hours, like first thing in the morning, like 8 a.m. There's always a line to get in and like somebody with a clipboard there. You got to know somebody.
Like getting in a fancy nightclub, huh?
Yeah. And I don't go during those hours. I
got to know a guy that knows a guy.
No. I just wait. I just wait till those times where nobody goes to the gym. I don't know. Noon for some reason. Seems right. But we had a really good question sent in by one of our Patreon members by the name of Ariel. So I thought we could just devote a whole episode to it.
Sounds good. What did old Ariel want to know?
Well, Ariel was asking about the difference between soda water, seltzer water, and mineral water. And then also, like, where does tonic play into all of this? So it's a really great question because there's a lot there. And I personally get a little confused over the soda, seltzer, mineral, sparkling, what all these things mean situation. So we're going to talk a little bit about our bubbly water first, and then we're going to get into tonic because that's a whole other thing.
Well, I think that was a great question. I'll tell you the truth. I didn't really know because there were several times when you were giving me ingredients that we were going to use for our video. You'd say, like, get club soda, and I'd look in our beer fridge and say, well, I got tonic water here. What do you think? And my bar back mom would say, no, that's not the same thing. I was like, well, it looks the same. Yeah, but it's not the same thing. You have to get club soda. Well, what's the difference? Just get it. And then I used Perrier one time, and I didn't know why that was okay.
Well, and I will say, like, when it comes into, just as a preface, when it comes to making cocktails, the soda, seltzer, mineral, sparkling water situation, you can use those pretty interchangeably. Now, as we'll get into, there are some subtle differences that if you are a very attentive bartender, you can utilize in building your drink. But the difference between all of those and tonic is very different. It's a whole lot more going on.
Well, I'm glad to learn about this, so yeah. I'll be better educated, keep up with my bar back.
Well, as far as the water goes, there are obviously all forms of carbonated water. Bubbly water, if you will. But the biggest differences really come from two major sources. First, how the water gets carbonated, And then what else you're drinking along with that water. What else is in that water? So let's break it down. Now, the oldest form of carbonated water is, of course, the naturally occurring kind. Carbonated water can come from the earth. This is usually what we call sparkling mineral water, though mineral water doesn't have to be sparkling, so you want to make sure it checks both boxes. And it's really just that. It's water that is in, like, the groundwater that's running beneath the earth's surface. It's running up against all of these different mineral deposits, things like potassium bicarbonate, sodium bicarbonate, sodium citrate, potassium sulfate, all these things that start to break down into the water. And then when you get those wells, those springs where the water comes up to the earth's surface, it is imbued with all of these minerals. And in some cases, the carbon dioxide gas will form bubbles.
I never knew that carbon dioxide occurred naturally within water. I always thought that all of those were pumped full of it at the factory.
I thought that too. It's like, I was very like, no, that there's no way. How does it stay carbonated if it just gets in? Doesn't it just release? But it doesn't. I mean, you know, you think like you have an open glass of carbonated water. The gas doesn't float out of it. It becomes trapped in the water structure. And that happens underground. It's like pressurized. Huh. So it happens. Yeah.
Well, what do you know?
Yeah. And they also, all of those minerals that break down, also they provide unique flavor profiles to the water. So that's why, like, you know, a lot of these like high-end sparkling mineral waters, or that actually still come from their original source, they have a flavor profile that's associated with them. You also get like some acidity from these natural minerals. Now, I will say this is something that comes up a lot. People, it's a incorrect belief that mineral water or sparkling water has enough acidity to do any sort of damage to you, specifically your tooth enamel. That's not you. The amount that you would have to consume to do any, like, you know, registered damage to wear down your tooth enamel is preposterous. It's not a thing to worry about.
So the different ones that come out of the ground already carbonated, of course, they're going to have different tastes depending on where they are and what most of the substructure of the earth is in that area.
Exactly. And the enjoyment of these mineral springs, these go back really as far as recorded history is known. They were worshipped as sort of sacred sites. They were imbued with healing properties according to the Greeks, the Romans, and the pagans. In fact, the word spa comes to us from Spa, Belgium, whose name actually dates back to Roman times, and it was renowned for its mineral springs.
I've always wanted to go to one of those natural springs that are real hot and it's snow outside and you go get in one of those.
Yeah.
I see them in movies and on TV and stuff, but I don't even know where you go to get one.
I don't think I've been to a lot of like the, you know, the where they pump spring water into a bath. Like, I've been to those in Japan. So it is natural spring water from underground, but they pump it into, like, a, you know, an actual bath that you can sit in. But I've never sat in, like, the natural spring itself.
I think they got them in, like, Greenland or something like that. Seems like I've seen them in some cold place.
Yeah, you get to hang out and, like, I always see, like, those, like, the tourists that, like, you get, like, your bucket of beer and, like, you stick it in the ice and then you sit in your hot spring and just, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Surrounded by snow, drink a beer in a hot tub.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could do that in your backyard, but it's not quite as natural.
No, it's not. But it is the best time to be in a hot tub is when there's snow on the ground.
Yeah, that's the only time I want to be in a hot tub. of course, the bathing and the drinking of this water alike, it was encouraged for health. And, you know, there's not a lot of actionable science, the health benefits of consuming spring water. But in some cases, actually, if you were sick from something like iron deficiency, which back in the day, lots of people would have been because we didn't quite understand micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, all that. There a lot of times would be iron deposits in these natural waters. So there was some, you know, evidence of like, oh, this person was sick, they got better. Well, they might have had an iron deficiency. They consumed the mineral water that happened to contain iron. They got a good dose of iron. So sometimes it worked.
Well, the one thing I would want to do, I would not want to drink the naturally occurring water that I'm sitting in. That doesn't sound like a good choice.
No. But I mean, that was not a concern. You do both. I'm not really sure if they separated off, like, that's a sitting tub, that's a drinking tub. I'm not really sure.
Well, we always teach Cooper and Charlie, don't drink the bath water. Your butt's been in there. Don't drink water your butt is in.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that. I'm not really sure how the mechanics of these spas work back in the times of the Greeks and Romans. But it was often called to as taking water. Like, that was the practice. You're sick, you need to take water. And that would be both bathing and in drinking the mineral water. And this stayed, you know, up through, you know, more modern times as a popular health, like, beverage and bath. But not everybody, of course, could manage the trek to a source to consume it there. So, inevitably, bottling the spring water became in demand. The first bottling of spring water takes place in 1621. That is from the Holy Well in Malvern, England. So we've had bottled water for a minute.
The Holy Well.
Yes, bottled water from the Holy Well. And as the increased demand for mineral water, for taking water, for health purposes, continues to increase into the next century, this actually really caught on in, like, American colonists. Like, they were big fans of mineral water. So it started to spread. There were more and more places where bottled water became popular, selling of bottled water.
In France, they had the Perrier.
Yes, Perrier, of course, from natural spring water. You know, one place that was renowned for its water back around the time when you have your early bottled waters taking place was actually Seltzer, Germany. This is about to get confusing. So here's the thing. Seltzer, Germany has natural spas. But as we'll get back to in a second, seltzer is not natural. So put a pin in that. But Seltzer, Germany became renowned for having its delicious bubbly water. Now, of course, wrangling water from its source for wide distribution, it's a hassle. So enter science to find an easier way to get the bubbles in the water. Now, it's thought that there was an English scientist by the name of William Brownrigg who was the first to artificially aerate water with carbon dioxide in 1740, but he didn't do much with that idea. He just kind of proved that he could. It's another Englishman that gets the credit, and that is Joseph Priestley. Joseph Priestley was a scientist who actually sort of accidentally discovered how to carbonate water. There was some water that had been suspended near a fermenting vat of beer, and then it had taken on the gases, and then he tried it. It was like, oh, this tastes great. I can figure out how to do it. So he devised a machine to do this purposely. He published a paper called Impregnating Water with Fixed Air in 1772, and he devised a machine for doing this. Now, his machine was a little cumbersome. It wasn't quite the most practical thing. So a lot of people read his paper, took his ideas, and created more efficient machines from it. So he didn't make a lot of money off of this, but he was recognized as the inventor. Yeah, kind of missed out on a business venture there.
And he was Jason's great-great-grandfather.
I do not think that's true. I think you made that up. Just pulled it from the air.
No one will be able to check that, so just let it lie.
I think someone can check that.
What do you think? They got something like Google or something?
Don't add to the atmosphere of fake knowledge out there. We don't want to put anything out there. Although I guess that's pretty harmless. Who knows?
And his address there was 90210.
Oh, ha ha. No. Now, it was a man by the name of Thomas Henry of Manchester, England, who started the first soda factory. So he's one of those that kind of looked at the paper, was like, that's cool, I can do this in a more streamlined way. And he started manufacturing what he called imitation seltzer. So seltzer, renowned for its mineral water, he made imitation seltzer, referencing the place in Germany that had good bubbly water. But that word would get disconnected from the product and just start being a term for, you know, artificial mineral water, unfortunately.
Huh. Well, yeah, a lot of places in Germany that seem to make good food names, because you got Hamburg, it was hamburger, and you got Frankfurt for Frankfurters, and I don't know. Maybe they had something to do. Maybe there's a French fry Germany, too. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. Just very, very tasty named cities. Belgian waffles? No, that's not.
Yeah, there you go.
It's Belgium, but it's close. Now, not long after Thomas Henry, a man by the name of J.J. Schwepp who was also inspired by Priestley's papers. Priestley actually helped him out a little bit. He began operating his soda-making factory in Geneva. And, of course, that's still around today. You still see Schweppes in the grocery stores with, you know, ginger ale and tonic water and soda water, yeah, all those things. So still available, still functional. But that dates all the way back to the birth of carbonated water.
And that's where Schweppes started?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, so terminology-wise, soda water became sort of the popular American term up until around World War II. And that was just due to the fact that sodium salts would be added to the water. So it just became a term, soda water, you know. It wasn't really until like the 1950s when you kind of get like some bougier terms coming into popularity. That's when you get it started referred to as sparkling water or seltzer water. So this is really when the term seltzer has been completely sort of removed from its past, referencing Germany, and just as like a term for this artificially carbonated water.
Too good for you water.
Yeah, fancy water. so, you know, restaurants started using these terms to make them sound a little nicer, and then the public followed suit. And that's, of course, aids to the confusion of, like, what is what. But nowadays, there are some loose guidelines to inform you of what is in your bottle. Now, soda water or club soda, that is water that is artificially carbonated, and it's flavored with a variety of minerals. So those include potassium sulfate, sodium chloride, disodium phosphate, and sodium bicarbonate. So for those, you're going to have that little bit of acidity, that little bit of sort of like bitterness, a little bit of saltiness, if you will. So, you know, if you're designing your drink down to the subtlest of flavor notes, that's what you're going to get from those artificial soda waters with minerals added. Now, seltzer water, this is not across the board. Some seltzer water will have minerals added, but oftentimes seltzer water is just artificially carbonated water. It doesn't necessarily include additional minerals. So it tastes less salty, less acidic. It just tastes more like water with bubbles. And then, of course, sparkling mineral water, which obviously still out there, still bottled from a natural source. But according to the FDA, it has to contain at least 250 parts per million of dissolved solids, the minerals and trace elements, that are in that source from which it is bottled. Though, some companies will further carbonate it or add additional minerals to control the flavor. Because you're thinking about it, you're getting a naturally occurring product that's rising up from the Earth's crust. That flavor could change as those minerals start to wear down. So the sparkling mineral water companies, as long as they have some measure of natural water in there, they can do whatever they want to make it taste how they feel it's supposed to taste.
Oh, okay. So they get it out, but what you're getting is not exactly the pure form. They might pump some more gas into it or whatever just to spruce it up some.
Yeah, might add some more bubbles, add some more minerals. You know, that's not really that doesn't knock it out of being called mineral water.
According to this chart that I've got, it said that club soda usually has traces of sodium, calcium, zinc, and copper. Seltzer doesn't have any kind of minerals in it, and sparkling mineral water has sodium and calcium.
Okay. Well.
But just very small amounts. The biggest one of anything is 9% of your daily dosage for calcium is in sparkling mineral water. That's the biggest percentage of anything.
Well, and once again, that's not... sparkling mineral water varies from brand to brand, so there are no...
Yeah, this is a general kind of average
form.
It's not everyone is like that.
Yeah, by and large, none of these are going to be... bad for you or good for you. It's just a different way of drinking water. There's a lot of thought that goes into, you know, drinking acidic water or if the bubbles can upset your stomach or settle your stomach or whatever. Not even like its stain removing properties. All of this stuff is sort of suspect. But if you like it for the taste, great.
You put enough booze in it and anything tastes good.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, so that's water. So there's your sort of breakdown. So, you know, next time you're at the store, you can make cocktails with all of these. There will be subtle taste differences. If you really want to, you know, get into it, get one of each and see if you can taste the difference. You know, make a vodka soda. Make three vodka sodas with a seltzer, a soda or a club soda, and a mineral water and see what tastes best. Really, really want to get into it. I'm sure somebody has an opinion on that in the booze world. I don't.
Well, or the mojito. Didn't we use club soda in that?
We did use club soda, yes. Actually, no, you use club soda. I use my Topo Chico, which is mineral water.
Oh, well, there you go. You could try it with the different ones for your mojito and see how that turns out.
There you go. But more to the point is you're not going to have a significant difference in flavor or quality between any of these. So, as you will. Now, tonic water, however, tonic water is a whole other thing entirely. But similar to mineral water, it did start off as a medical aid. Hmm. So tonic water is basically carbonated water infused with quinine, and then it's sweetened. Quinine is the key, though, to tonic water. That's really the thing that makes tonic tonic and begins the origin of tonic water, if you will. So what is quinine? Quinine is a chemical compound found in the bark of the cinchona tree, which is native to Peru and surrounding areas. It was first used by the Quechua people, who are indigenous to Peru, Bolivia, and Ecuador, and they used it as a muscle relaxer, and it also was good at stopping shivering. Now, they call it quinquina or holy bark, the Quechua word, which would eventually give it its medicinal name, quinine, quinquina. When given to people that had shivers from malaria, this had an unexpected, very important side benefit. The quinine would actually kill off the parasite causing the disease. So they were just giving it to people to treat the shivers, but then the net effect was it would cure malaria. It was a very, very important discovery at the time, given that most of these regions were pretty ravaged by malaria.
Hmm. Bartender, I've got malaria. Keep the gin and tonics coming.
Well, that might not work for you, but we'll come back to that. Now, to offset the... It was a very bitter taste, quinine. So to offset the bitter taste of the bark, the Quechua people would mix it with some sweetened water, effectively creating the earliest version of what would eventually be tonic water. So who invented tonic? Well, I'd say the Quechua people were the first in form. Hmm. Now, Spanish Jesuit missionaries that were staying in Peru, they observed these healing properties of quinine around like the 1570s, and they brought that knowledge back to Spain and subsequently the rest of Europe. Hence why the bark is sometimes called Jesuit's bark. It became an increasingly popular import, especially after it was used to cure King Charles II himself for malaria at the end of the 17th century.
Hmm.
Now, I will say that if you ever look into quinine yourself, there are a couple other like myths that come up about how it was discovered. There's like a story about like a soldier falling into a puddle of water because he was sick from malaria, and the water had bark in it, and he woke up cured. There's another one about like a duchess or something who named it and discovered it. It was the Quechua people. They've been using it for centuries. It was just the missionaries that observed them using it and then brought that knowledge back. So, you know, there's some myths that put the discovery in other people's hands, but it was already being used widely. Now, it is interesting to note that around the time that like King Charles probably took that malaria cure, he probably took it in the fashionable way at the time, which would have been ground into a fine powder and mixed with wine. So it's a bummer that you got malaria, but here's some bitter wine medicine.
Quine wine.
Quine, there you go. Quine wine. Makes me want to mix tonic water and red wine. See how that works out.
Hmm.
Probably.
I don't think I would go for that.
Maybe. But hey, by the 1940s, quinine was the go-to treatment for malaria. And it really opened the world up to explorers and, well, colonizers alike. This led to an entire new century of exploration throughout the 19th century. Now, the British would take to mixing their quinine powder with gin to balance out the bitterness. So there you have your earliest G&Ts, born out of pure necessity for British explorers and colonizers to take their malaria medicine in a little way that they could handle it.
Thus the term, take your medicine like a man.
Is that a term?
Yeah. Have you ever heard that?
No, but I feel like that's gendered and unnecessary.
Well, it comes from the old white guy days.
The old white guy days. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you can send it right back if that's where it comes from. Now, soon the addition of sugar and soda water was bottled with the quinine to create the first sort of more modern sense tonic water. And that began being bottled in 1858. And this is when major soda player Schweppes got into the tonic business. So just as much as they were there with the earliest soda water, they were real quick into the tonic game. So just like about a decade later, they started making their bottled tonic and canned tonic in 1870. They added some lime flavoring into theirs. So it was very popular just as like a drink, not just for treating malaria.
Yeah, they had a song that went with it. You put the lime in the tonic and you mix them both together. Put the lime in the tonic and then you feel better.
I don't think that was the song.
You don't think that was it?
That might have actually made more likely to make you feel better, though, than a coconut. So, hey, there's some truth there. Coconuts will not cure malaria. That's true. Now, by the end of World War II, there were other more effective anti-malarials that sort of phased out the demand for quinine. Quinine was good at what it did, but it had a lot of unfortunate side effects. But, you know, so you had other medicines come on the scene that were a little bit easier to take. But by then, the consumption of tonic water and, of course, the classic gin and tonic had become staples in worldwide consumption. You know, that kind of at the same time, you know, you have like this evolution of like the reputation of gin becoming a bit more of like a nice like upper class spirit to order, like by the turn of the century, away from its past as like, you know, the mother's ruin, yeah. The thing that you drank and you ended up like in out on the streets. So the G&T kind of helped with the rehabilitation of gin's image.
Yeah, between gin and tonics and martinis, that's about as high class as you get.
Well, now, of course, nowadays, tonic water is not consumed for its anti-malarial properties, but it is consumed for sheer taste and as a companion to gin in the cocktail world. And the quinine content, Dad, you mentioned that if you drink enough G&Ts, maybe you could get rid of your malaria. Nowadays, the quinine content is highly regulated around the world. So modern tonic contains no more than 83 milligrams of quinine per liter, a much lower concentration compared to like 500 to 1,000 in a therapeutic dose of quinine tablets. So you would have to drink... Well, I should say, you could not drink enough tonic to make up for that case of malaria that you should definitely go to the hospital and get treated and not sit at the bar.
Hell, with the tonic water, I'll just drink a lot of gin. Maybe that'll help.
No, it might feel like it's helping, but it's not going to do anything.
That'll get rid of the shakes. Maybe it'll give it to you.
No, your parasites might be drunk, but they will still be very much among the living, so... That's not gonna do you any good.
Now, the one thing that I noticed amongst all of them, club soda and seltzer and sparkling mineral water, for the most part, are zero calories. Tonic water, however, averages about 121 calories a serving because it has carbs and sugar in it.
Well, it has sugar.
As well as sodium, zinc, and copper.
Yeah, tonic has a lot of sugar in it. And it makes sense because you're offsetting the bitterness. I mean, tonic water, if you drink tonic, you will taste a good amount of bitterness, but there is a lot of sugar that's balanced against that to make it palatable, because quinine is a very intensely bitter compound. So
it doesn't even make the tonic water sweet with that sugar in it. It just balances out the bitter, so it's not too bitter.
Yeah, and I will say you're probably like probably what your facts are referencing is like gun tonic, like tonic on the gun at a bar. That is a very sweet syrupy tonic. There are some really great artisanal tonics out there that you can find. My go-to, because I feel like it's as good as it is, it's pretty readily available, is Fever Tree, which takes its name from the origin of quinine. Fever Tree, mm-hmm. referencing the tree that would help break your fever from malaria.
Fever Tree.
Yeah. Fever Tree tonic is really cool. They actually have like a couple different flavor tonics that have different mineral profiles and flavor profiles that work alongside the quinine. So, and those are a little lower in sugar. They don't rely quite as much on the sweetness. They allow a little bit more of just present bitterness. So I like those a lot better as mixers. So if you've had like a well gin and tonic with like cheap gin and syrupy gun tonic water, you probably aren't a fan of gin and tonics. But that is not the best representation of gin and tonics. I actually do enjoy a gin and tonic with good gin, good tonic, sometimes even a little splash of soda to kind of cut the sweetness.
Now, Kiss's recipe was just cold gin.
Well, I mean, that's fine, but this is an episode about tonic and soda, so I can't really do much with that.
That's true. Well, never mind. They didn't have any songs about that.
No, I can't think of any songs about tonic water.
You put the lime in the tonic water, mix them both together. I told you that one already. Did you forget?
No, that's not a song. So there you go. So
Ariel, did that answer your question?
I hope it did. Definitely, you know, now next time you go out to buy your mixers, if you can find some Fever Tree or like I said, there are a couple other brands. I feel like that they're a little bit more harder to find, but Fever Tree is pretty widely distributed. They also make a really good ginger beer, and I think they have the good soda or club soda. I think they have club soda. But yeah, it's a, you know, check out a, you know, fancier tonic. Or definitely if you are one of those people that just loves spirit and soda, and I think that's fine. Like I actually, if I'm in that realm, I love a whiskey soda. That's my go-to. If I'm gonna drink like a tall drink, highball, like mm-hmm. that's my favorite. And now I'm kind of curious, like, well, I usually just drink it with whatever seltzer, whatever soda, but what's a whiskey highball with like a good mineral water? I don't know, maybe it's different.
Well, and I'm also going to assume that if maybe you've had, a club soda before, something like that, and you didn't really like it, it was a little funny tasting, there you can try a different kind, because they don't all taste the same. They're all made a little bit differently. So just because you've had one doesn't mean you've had them all.
Yeah. Well, of course, now we live in the era of the hard seltzer, which, you know, it makes sense that it's seltzer, because as we mentioned, seltzer is usually the one that has the least additional minerals, flavorings mm-hmm. to them. So that makes sense, because those taste like nothing.
Yeah, Mom got all excited when I said what we were going to do our episode about, because she said, oh, do we get to try different kinds of hard seltzers? I said, no, not that kind.
Now, we did an episode on hard seltzer, or the origins of hard seltzer, and like on back through like the, you know, Alka-Pops and all that. But we never did a taste test of hard seltzer. I don't know what that would. I have a pretty okay palate, and every time I get excited by a new flavor of hard seltzer, I'll see at my store like, oh, I want to try that elderflower and pear. Yeah. And then I drink it, and I'm like, huh, that tastes like water. It tastes like water. It tastes like maybe somebody like was bottling this water. Well, maybe they were thinking of a pear. Maybe. I still
They're
like
all
it.
All pretty much the same, huh?
I like hard seltzer as a concept. Like, you know, when I kind of want to just like drink and relax, but I also like, I don't know, just want something refreshing on a hot day. Like, I feel like that's the ultimate, like, okay, it tastes like nothing other than just cold and refreshing. But it's also, you know, if we're partying or whatever, I can feel like I'm relaxing.
Well, that's kind of like, you know, as you know, in our search for Propel, I like Propel a lot.
Yes.
Propel water. And grape is always a flavor that I went with. Well, I found out that I like berry as well. And then I found out I like black cherry too. And Mom said, oh, I'm surprised you like those different flavors. I said, well, they all taste the same. It's not that I like all the different flavors. They all taste the same to me.
I'm always surprised when people have really strong, like, White Claw preferences. Like, oh, I can't stand the black cherry. I'm like, what? It's like across the room, somebody's just whispering black cherry at you. Like, it's not, it doesn't taste like anything. It's okay. But I don't know. I mean, it's inconsequential drinking. It's fine.
Yeah.
I have seen that somebody posted a picture of alcoholic flat water. So not sparkling. And that I think is, I don't know. I guess if that's your jam, that's fine. But like, that's, I don't know if I could do that. The bubbles are necessary. It's like, but I feel the same way about whiskey and water. You know, when people order that, like, not whiskey soda, like, I want whiskey just with water. Like,
yeah. Well, sometimes you're just trying to cut the whiskey some, so it's not so, tough. Yeah. You know, or I mean, you could put a bunch of ice in it, let the ice melt. When you sit there and nurse it and shake it around for a while before you drink it, that's kind of the same thing.
I guess I just, I don't know. If there's an option to make something bubbly, I'm always going to want that. I'm a big, big fan of Jason Priestley's great-great-granddad for his inventions.
Always default to the bubbles.
Yes. When in doubt, bubbles.
When in doubt, bubble it out.
There you go. So, over on the video this week, we're going to be playing around with some tonic water, some seltzer water, perhaps. We'll be doing some fun stuff. I got a fun idea. Gonna take a look at the classic G&T and give it a little bit of a makeover, but keep it simple.
I'm gonna try to catch malaria so I can drink a bunch of tonic water and get rid of it.
No, you're not gonna do that. That would not. Oh. Don't do that. No. Oh. Nope. Nope. That's no.
I guess I'd have to go to Sawbones to do that.
Yeah, I would say this. It's a spiritual crossover here with Sawbones. It is funny that there was a lot of alcohol history relates back to medical history. And I think there are a lot of points where Sydney and I are doing similar research, but for different purposes.
That's because all doctors drink. So they invented the way to get around, like, prohibition and everything.
Well, it's like, you know, there's like the two snakes or whatever. It's like the balance between, like, cure and a poison. I fall on the poison end and Sydney falls on the cure end. That's yeah. It. We're operating on the same scale.
Hey, I like both those bands too.
The poison and the cure? All right.
Yeah. Well, all right. Got to fit them into the episode along with Kiss. We're killing it.
I feel like you bring Kiss up a lot. I don't. Do you want to talk about Kiss? Is that what you just need a reason to talk about Kiss? He's like, okay, this week on the podcast, I don't know, we're not going to talk about alcohol. We're going to talk about Kiss. Let's get it out of the way.
How much drinking we did at a Kiss concert.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, Ariel, I hope that your question has been adequately answered. Thank you so much for sending in such an excellent question. And hey, if you have a question out there, I'm always happy to answer them both in, you know, we do like multiple questions in an episode, but if you ask a question that leads to a full episode, you get a full episode. Whee!
Yep, we'll name it after you. It's the Ariel's
Guide
water
to
question.
Soda and Tonic.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dad, of course, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tater, for having me. It's always a pleasure. And once again, I learned something else I didn't know.
There you go. If you want to find us on social media, check us out at Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to email us, you can email us at neattheboozecast@gmail.com. If you want to help support us, we are on Patreon. We give you rewards like stickers and coasters. And we're doing a new bespoke cocktail video series that you can only access if you belong to our Patreon. So, and of course, if you want to check out the Facebook group, Dad started a Facebook group.
Meet the Booze Cast.
There you go. So go share your pictures, share your drink recipes. Talk amongst yourselves.
That's right. We enjoy hearing from you, and whatever you've got to post, we always are interested and glad to influence you towards trying some new drinks, possibly.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have been Kayla Smurl.
I have been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
Neat! Germany's got it made with all those places that are so good to name food after.
Well, Germany has a lot of good food for you, I think. I don't think I can eat much in Germany.
Is there a mustard Germany and a pretzel Germany?
No, but they make good pretzels.
Well, their sauerkraut must come from Germany.
Yeah, now you're just saying German... sounding things and assuming there's a town. I come from Pretzelville.